Random House Audio presents The New Cool by Neil Bascom. Read for you by Kirby Hayborn. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Aristotle. I have never let my schooling interfere with my education. Mark Twain. Societies get the best of what they celebrate. Dr. Woody Flowers. Dramatis Personae. Mentors. Amir Abou-Shehir, a 37-year-old physics teacher and head of the Dos Pueblos Engineering Academy, he aims to revolutionize how America teaches its kids. His ragtag team of robotics rookies and their first competition season will prove instrumental to the realization of his vision. Stan Rifle. An internet entrepreneur and jack-of-all-trades engineer, he plays straight man to the intensely enthusiastic Amir. In the Batcave at his Santa Barbara home, the students spend long hours designing their robot. Students. Chase Buchanan. With a gaunt, angular face and surfer-like calm, he is the team's lead driver. Despite his learning disabilities, he has a genius for spatial relationships that shines through during the build season, particularly in assembling the robot's drive system. Angie Dai. A quiet, retreating math savant and the daughter of two Chinese professors, she volunteered her petite frame to serve as a weight source for the team's drivetrain prototype and acts as a key member of the electrical crew. Max Garber. He is one of the team's Solid Seven, a crew that uses computer-aided drafting software to design the robot. He focuses on the robot's helix, a triumph of math and geometry, which delivers balls to the shooter. Andrew Hsu. A classically trained cellist with the body of a football player, he becomes a master of the lathe in the machine shop. He is also one of the two lead scouts at competitions. Gabe Reeves Corbett. Taekwondo champion and theater production guru, he is foremost an extraordinarily gifted computer programmer. Considered the team's best hope, Gabe is pushed to live up to these expectations during the season and, in the process, realizes something very important about his own future. Luke Seal. 6 feet 2 inches tall, beanpole thin, with a penchant for wearing a beret, he designs the drivetrain's wheel modules. He is also the team's voice of optimism. Stuart Sherwin. Known on the team for his thick, curly hair that hangs down past his shoulders, he is a scouting captain and member of the Solid Seven, specifically responsible for designing the turreted shooter. Anthony Turk. The team's teddy bear, with the build to fit, Turk wants nothing more than to be the human shooter at competitions, especially since he never made the varsity basketball team. He is a fanatic Lakers fan. Yidi Wang. A tall, bubbly concert pianist, Yidi is a member of the Shooter Mechanism crew and finds herself responsible for much of its prototyping. She is also the lead presenter to the judges at competitions. Kevin Wojcik. Earnest and one of the most reliable, hard-working members of the DePenguineers, he is one of the team's three programmers and also the co-pilot of the Penguin Bot. Timeline. January 3, 2009, kickoff day. The new game is revealed, and the 46-day race to build the ultimate robot begins. February 17, 2009, robot ship date deadline. The FedEx truck arrives, and the team's finished robot must be crated up and ready to be delivered to the first regional competition. March 12th through 14th, Los Angeles Regional Competition, Long Beach Arena. The DePenguineers compete against 59 teams for the regional championship and a chance to earn a ticket to the first championship. March 26th through 28th, Sacramento Regional Competition, The Pavilion, University of California, Davis. The second and last shot that the Penguineers will have for regional victory and the opportunity to compete against the best of the best. April 16th through 18th, First Championship, Georgia Dome, Atlanta. A total of 348 teams from the United States and a host of other countries come together in the fiercest robotics competition in the world. Will the Penguineers be among these and earn a chance to prove themselves against the legends of FIRST? Prologue. April 18th, 2009. It was a beautiful morning for the championship final at Atlanta's Georgia Dome. Crisp, cloudless, a slight breeze, a perfect beginning to the day. Fans of all ages and stripes arrived at the stadium. They climbed out of the metro station. They descended from bus after bus. They traveled in packs by foot, crossing Centennial Olympic Park with a brisk step that defied the early hour. They crammed the escalators, stood impatiently in the serpentine line before the entrance, and flowed in a constant stream through the turnstiles. Click, click, click. The stadium attendants tallied the thousands with their handheld counters. The fans that April morning made the usual ticket holders for a Georgia Dome showdown look bland and dispirited. Many dressed in team jerseys. The arriving crowds were a blur of colors, including every shade of neon. Some had spray-painted their hair or beards or shoes to match. Others had gone for a full mohawk and face paint. Many walked with team flags draped over their shoulders and wore team buttons on their chests like medals. They passed out swag by the bucket, here a rubber chicken lanyard, there a Weeble robot. Mascots abounded. A pink ogre strolled alongside a man in a nun's habit, alongside a two-headed Martian, alongside a purple-headed dragon, alongside a pair of Vikings. Once in the stands, the mascots led their fans in thunderous cheers long before their teams made their way into the stadium. All of this excitement and energy was not for the Super Bowl or the NCAA Final Four or Olympic Trials or even the Little League World Series. It was for the first, for inspiration and recognition of science and technology, championship, a high school robotics competition. Down below, the locker rooms were empty. The teams needed so much room to prepare for their matches that they had overtaken an entire exhibition hall in the cavernous, glass-enclosed World Congress Center next door to the Georgia Dome. Teams were divided into individual 10-by-10-foot spaces, one beside the other, in long rows. These areas were called pits, like at a race car track. But in many, the mood was the same as in a gridiron locker room before a big game. Coaches huddled with their squads, talking strategy and rehashing the scouting reports of their opponents. Some players sat on the floor, heads between their knees, focusing, praying, or just trying to catch their breath. Others bounced up and down, shook their arms and rolled their necks, loosening the muscles that seemed to want to freeze them in place. "We can do this. I know it. We can do this," was a common refrain. Some teams didn't have the leisure to worry. In their pits, they rushed to mend their robots, many of which looked like mailboxes on wheels. Their basic shape belied their sophistication. These robots were operating with the same kind of complex integrated controls used on Mars rovers. But sophistication breeds trouble. And after these robots had been put through the ringer during the qualifying rounds, many needed repair. Before the first matches of the day, students and their coaches scrambled for the quick fix. They relinked broken chains, riveted loose frames, soldered wires, debugged code, and straightened bent aluminum rods with their bare hands. The smell of burnt metal, adrenaline, and sawdust saturated the air.
"Robot!"
a kid shouted.
"Coming through! Robot!"
echoed another.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?